now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. The photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you are listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Alan Ritter. Alan Ritter is a PhD chemist who is interested in a new society. To start that up, he is actively creating a produce club in the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA area. He is presently using commercial agriculture produce bought at wholesale prices to drastically reduce the costs to eat whole foods for his club members. In the summer, he does buy from local farms, and his medium-term goal is local. Alan is in this social microcosm as it is something he can start, and it will lead to a like-minded group ready for the next stages of changing society. Alan's local page for the Produce Club is only for those in the area to receive produce. It is at produceclub.us. Alan's overview page is www.facebook.com/produceclubsamericas, and he also has a produce club written about in his local newspaper, and we'll have all these links up on the Cosmic Switchboard website as well as our dedicated YouTube channel. Alan also has a very informative weekly radio show on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com, and Emerging Forest. So without any further ado, Alan Ritter, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine. I've been really looking forward to this show, Alan. Here at the Cosmic Switchboard, we're very solutions-oriented. We want to help people detach themselves from this matrix of control, and your information, your expertise will help people move in that direction. Now, before we get into it, can you tell the listeners a bit about yourself and how you got into this life's work of yours?
I guess I was a normal person inside the box. Got a PhD in chemistry in 1994 from the University of Pennsylvania. Then I moved on to a job as a defense contractor until the winter of 2004-05, when something changed in my mind. It was brought on by a heavy emotional event. And the beginnings of my adventure was a sleepless month of January of 2005. In which basically all of my connections to who I had been in the past were demyelinated because I didn't sleep for that month. Ever since then, I basically explored a lot of new territory, finances, then the financial markets and banking was the first thing that I actually really got into exploring. And then along the road, I learned about permaculture and I learned about farming and I learned a lot of different things. But the how I got into the Produce Club was really practical. In 2010, I was caring for my mom. And since I was her sole caregiver, I wasn't employed. And I really was very interested in eating clean and eating whole plants and going to the local retailers in my area was basically chewing through an incredible amount of money, and I wasn't going to be able to continue that lifestyle, and I really wanted to. So I talked to several of the ladies who come and be my mother's female help during the day, because of course I can't do those things. And one of them came up with the fact that we live in a town, in a city that has a wholesale terminal, And we just went down and toured the wholesale terminal and found an organic supplier there. And we were blown away by the prices. And I just turned to the folks that I went with and said, I can't eat all of this because you had to buy a case, you know, 40 or 50 pounds of an item. And I turned to them and I said, would you mind sharing? And of course, you know, when you get something for a third of the price or a half of the price that you're paying in the grocery store, the answer is always yes. And I just started sharing, and I would go to the produce terminal and buy. And sooner rather than later, word got out that I had this product. And literally by word of mouth, 90 days later, I was running around with my car serving 150 homes. So that was the first version of the Produce Club. That version kind of went under wraps when my mom got successively more ill. And then I had to take care of her. So the Produce Club at that location, which was in Wayne, Pennsylvania, went by the by. And then my mom passed in January of 13, and I had a significantly long recovery period from that. And then the new Produce Club started out because of a happy coincidence of me finding a really good place to live. And it happened to be 7 minutes from the supplier that I used to use. I'm actually just over the bridge in New Jersey from the wholesaler that I use. And I said, okay, I can basically try this. And I basically started by putting an ad up on a local Facebook page, Vegan City Philadelphia, and a few other pages like that, and had a few contacts and started delivering produce. And it's been a success.
Well, we're really excited about this because you make some key points in your thesis about all this. There's issues to do with food security, lifestyle choices, which I'd like you to comment upon, and also the concept of land stewardship. If we look back in history, clearly the legacy of land stewardship by the powers that be is appalling, to say the least. So could you talk a bit about food security, lifestyle choices, and the whole concept of land stewardship?
I don't do what I do now as a business. I do this. It is a business. It is paying me a small amount of money. It is turning the corner economically, which I'm very pleased to see. I think it will be viable as something to quote unquote pay me money, but that's an old society concept. How I'm getting into this is I'm getting into this on a more serious note, saying, as my bedrock for why I'm doing this and why I do this, maybe other people don't buy from me for this reason, but some people in the club do know this, that the present powers that be have a standard operational procedure, and it's called annual farming. And there's a gentleman by the name of Mark Shepard, and he wrote a book called Restoration Agriculture. And he has a really interesting, or I would say seminal, video on the internet. It's about a 2-hour and 38-minute lecture. In the beginning of that, he basically goes over what the resume of the powers that be is going back many thousands of years. So you don't need to look at them and say, well, how have they been doing? What's their record? You can just look at the population centers, or what used to be the population centers of the middles of their empire. You can look at Africa. It's all, you know, where their population centers, what used to be the most resource plentiful areas of that continent, is now a desert. If you look at Baghdad, which used to be the center of their empire, it's now a desert. And successively, in that area, their record for land stewardship and how they treat the land, necessarily how they treat people that they're in charge of, is the same down the line. they're taking verdant resource-heavy areas and making them into wastelands. So I basically look at them and say, well, gee, their resume is clear. They're wasters. They waste their opportunities. So I looked at that and I said, well, that's a pretty unimpeachable resume. They haven't done anything different. Therefore, if I want something different in the world, I have to do it myself. I mean, I know there are other people that are doing it, but if I want change to happen in the world, I kind of have to do the same thing. So as far as lifestyle choices, I sort of have a progression in how I think of the Produce Club. I think of the Produce Club as starting with food because it's something that a political rulership can yank you by. They can easily limit it if your access to it is limited, if your access to it is only through their quote-unquote store system. So right now I am through their store system, but in the long term I don't want to be through their store system. But that is just my perspective from a perspective of food. Of course, I'm starting there, but my ideas of where I want to go don't end there. I look at the way the medical system is now. I look at the number of vaccines that children receive. I don't want to just say I just look at that. I look at the whole of the things that I know about. I look at finance. I look at very many things like that. I just would rather do it a different way. I'm not saying that the present way is incorrect. That's their perspective. That's how they want to deal with things. I want to deal with things in a different way. So I'm starting very small. I don't have that much. When I started this, I literally had zero money. I don't have that much more than zero money right now, but I have a reasonable number of people who are very interested and very enthusiastic about what I do.
And it's something that is duplicatable. It's something that people can learn on their own, begin to implement these principles in their own local areas, and that way kind of a derivation of the oil spot theory. You have these locations where people work with each other in this fashion, and then they begin to become self-sufficient, get off the grid, are no longer reliant upon the system for what passes for food. You're a chemist, so you look at things from a chemical standpoint, and you also, you're a man of my own heart, you're a student of history like I am. Now, to break it down in lay terms, talk about the significance of soil and what plants are and how plants grow and how they thrive, because that is something that a lot of people take for granted, but there are inner mechanics, inner dynamics involved that people need to be aware of when they get involved in this kind of work.
Thanks so much for bringing that up. The source for this information, there are many sources for this information, one of which I've already mentioned, Mark Shepard. But another key source for this information is a natural process farmer named Bob Canard, B-O-B-C-A-N-N-A-R-D. And he has got many YouTube videos. The one that you might start with, or the one that I would start with if I was recommending one, is an 83-minute or something like that video from a lecture that he gave at Berkeley. It's called Edible Education 103 or something like that. Basically, what he did for me is he redefined how I look at how plants function. The first thing he said was, the farmer's job, or the land steward's job, is to grow a soil. Nothing else. It's not to grow plants. It's to grow a soil. It's to offer a plant a place to grow. And so he says, I'm going to supply this ground with compost. If I'm regenerating this ground, it's been poorly used. I'm going to go seek in the mountainsides different samples of native composts that are still very active. And I'm going to bring it down to my my area that I want to regenerate. And I'm going to make a compost tea out of that starter with all kinds of other ingredients. And then what he said about how plants function basically changed a great deal about how I look at agriculture. This is kind of his picture. The picture that he relates, which is closer to the reality of how plants grow. So plants generate by photosynthesis a large amount of sugar, and they might use even more than 50% of that sugar to put into the soil to bribe bacteria or to grow a bacterial colony that mines minerals that the plant likes and wants and needs to grow its immune system. In other words, to grow itself to full maturity, to full vibrance, and to have then all of the nutrition to deliver to whoever is going to eat that plant. I don't think the plant is saying, well, in some cases, fruit of a plant is to propagate itself. It definitely is a conscious action for consumption of its fruit. So the plant is actually a very conscious being, because a plant, what I just said was, the plant is culturing bacteria that are in the soil. So we culture bacteria that are in our stomach. So as an analogy, a plant's stomach is actually in the soil. And everything about that plant, everything about that plant's health depends on the health of its stomach that's actually in the soil. So when we look at that dynamic and we say, okay, plants are growing bacterial colony that's in the soil, and the bacteria go out and they use the product of eating the sugar, which is an acid, to basically, in Bob Kennard's words, pee on the rocks and mine the minerals. And then those minerals are inside the bacteria. And these bacteria are really short-lived. I mean, they're like the ones that are in our gut. We like to think that we eat the food that we put in our stomach, but actually bacteria eat the food that we put in our stomach, and we eat the leavings after they die. So we actually partake nutrition from dead bacteria that are in our stomach. So you can see that plants are quite the analogous system. They feed sugars to these bacteria that are in the soil, and then they eat what's left when the bacteria die, which is these minerals. Now, the form of those minerals is super key, because the form of those minerals is not ionic. It's not a salt. It is some colloidal form or some plant form. Now, why is that super key? That's because what modern fertilizers deliver, for the most part, is this notion of NPK. And conventional agriculture is a salt form of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and whatever else is wanting to be fed. But that is not what the plant would prefer to eat to fully develop its immune system. So right then, understanding that, and then Bob Kennard basically saying these very key words, there is nothing in our commercial divisions of agriculture, the commercial produce, either organic or commercial, that is delivering this type of product. So that's a very key point. And the point is, and I drew a picture of this on the front of, as a cartoon. And in the lower left-hand corner, I put the word agriculture. And down next to that, I put conventional. And literally right next to it, a little bit up the line, I put organic, because it's agriculture. And then in the other corner, all the way up to the other side, I put the word farming, as in farmers are engaged in growing a soil, and I put the word in a little circle, food. Because if you consider the difference in immune system as a representation of the nutrition that the plant is going to deliver to the person, there isn't anything that's delivered by commercial agriculture at this point that's food.
My colleague and I just did a dialogue about how so many things that are passed off as food on the store shelves is like a twisted, bizarre chemical concoction. And so what you're talking about is going back to the basics in a way that produces healthy crops, but also reinvigorates the soil. Indeed, as you point out, grow the soil.
There's a system, and Mark Shepherd's lecture is really a good one to watch. You don't have to watch 2 hours and 38 minutes. You have to watch about 25 in order to understand his delvings into history and him basically saying annual agriculture doesn't work because it basically destroys the resource, and the resource is the continuing growing soil. So what we're being asked to do by common sense is we're being asked to move toward a more permanent agriculture, a more permaculture perspective, and that's going to be, in Mark Shepherd's perspective, looking at what naturally occurs, looking at what the natural plants were that were growing there when the settlers came. The scientific word for that is the biome. And in North America, in the area that I am, it's chestnuts, hazelnuts, blueberries, blackberries, from the top of the climax forest to the bottom of the climax forest. Those would be the plants that would be permanently resident, and they would continue to grow the soil's fertility. It's not the soil would be done in one season and you basically till it. You would actually continue to grow the soil because the plants would never be pulled up. That's something that's, you know, that continual growing and heightened growing of soil fertility is something that's never explored in annual agriculture, because in annual agriculture, at the end of the season, you have bare ground. And you have bare ground over a winter. And I just drive by farmers' fields and with my jaw down at my on my chest, basically saying they're leaving their kids out in the freezing cold without any scarf or without any coat on. And we're asked to look at this and treat them as being serious land stewards.
It's almost a form of vegetable strip mining or soil strip mining, where they just take and there's no effort to restore. It's kind of like slash and burn and move on, but they justify it by saying that certain crops and vegetables and fruits are seasonal, so that's another way they can justify the agricultural yearly concept. What you're talking about as far as the correct way to utilize soil, the correct way to utilize plants, how does that differ from the way that the agricultural cartels operate?
What you just said as far as agricultural strip mining is a very key point. I might say this in a goofy way, but in order to understand the mindset of a corporate system, you need to understand a little bit about corporate law and what they're bound by. They're a corporate entity. If they become a corporate entity and they have stockholders and the whole nine yards, they're bound to operate by under corporate law, or they're going to get in trouble. And corporate law basically says if there's the way to maximize profit is the way you will conduct your business. Otherwise, they're breaking corporate law. They're going to be in court. Their stockholders are going to take them to task. So that doesn't really allow them to look at the situation from another perspective and say, you know, we really need to look at this long term and we really need to grow our soil. They come to a fork in the road. And what they do is they can do certain shenanigans to get around that. one of the other points that Bob Kennard makes is in California, when the first settlers arrived, there was a really fertile area that grew raspberries, and raspberries are a crop that demands a really fertile area. So after a few years of farming with the don't give anything back, take it all for people farming raspberries, the soil actually lost so much fertility that they weren't able to grow raspberries anymore. And so what did they do? They said, oh, okay, we're not going to grow raspberries here anymore, but we're not going to regenerate the soil. We're basically going to switch to apples. And so they switched to apples, and they farmed apples for 60 years. I think the place is called Sebastopol, but you can check into his lectures. And apples were incredibly famous from that area for about 50-some-odd years. And then the local ag university started coming out with papers about apple decline syndrome. And, of course, they were writing it up as if an act of God, where it's just an act of man being silly about not giving back to the land and taking all for people.
What happens is the corporations, they're always about the bottom line, so they basically rape the land. They get as much out of it as they can, and when it looks like they can't grow raspberries, the light comes on in a way, and then they decide to, well, we can grow apples, but really it's just kind of adding fuel to the fire, and there's no continuity, no growth.
You can look at it and say, oh, they're just trapped by the corporate rules. And I hold my finger up for that one, and I say, they created the corporate rules. They know what they're creating. So even if they want to say, oh, we're bound by corporate law, you can say to them, look at them and say, you created corporate law. You're not going to get out of your responsibility for how this is taking place. And you can also say, okay, what they're doing is they're going for more vibrant soil to a less vibrant soil, but they're just switching crops instead of reinvigorating the soil. That's when I started saying, oh, okay, I see their track record. I see what they're doing. They're basically destroying life and destroying the vibrancy of life. So at that point, I say, okay, I see their process. I see what they do. I see how they hide themselves behind something that you could rationalize that they're not responsible for their actions, i.e. corporate law. So how's their track record? Have they ever done anything different down through all of the track record that I could see and watching Mark Shepard's video and just looking around at the deserts of the breadbasket, the cradle of life, the confluence of the Tigris and the Euphrates River, and you're like, well, damn, that's a desert. So it's not they're just making the mistakes and they knew at one point how to do it. No, they basically have the same track record. And because what I'm saying is so serious, to me it's very serious, because of what I'm saying in my mind is so serious, I'm basically saying I can't use their services anymore because they don't get it. And they don't get it in such a way that I basically, from my perspective, I have to do something completely new. I have to start from nothing. I know there are other people out there who've also reached the same conclusion, but I've reached the conclusion that a government, which is literally translated as govern being control and ment being mind, a government is naturally a limiter of things that you can do. It's a limiter of experience. It's a limiter of fertility in the mind. Naturally, from a ruling perspective, you limit the expression or the limit the actions. But the outcome of this limitation in the exploration of the human psyche which is what we're here for, is a limitation in natural systems. So there's always this expression of as within, such without, or something like that. So as within mind control, such without making deserts and wastelands. So that's another perspective that I like to just show people, because what I'm saying is such a serious thing for me, is basically this is what I'm doing, and I'm sure that what I'm doing for myself, I had to do a lot of due diligence in order to say, not follow the political system, not take it seriously anymore, and move on and do something myself.
It's incumbent upon individuals and society as a whole to take self-responsibility. That is one of the key blocking points for those who refuse to wake up and smell the coffee. On the one hand, they defend their ego tenaciously because they don't want to admit they've been played for a fool, they've been played for a chump. That's a bitter pill to have to swallow. Many of us have had to swallow that pill. I was a flag-waving, brain-dead Republican. I'm now a recovering Republican because I know that the whole false left-right paradigm is a sham, and it's just meant to create divide-and-conquer mentality. And so once we get past that block of, well, I've been played for a fool, man up, woman up, get over it, then we have to decide, okay, well, what do we do about it? And you're really big on the importance of accountability, of, okay, I'll find a niche in society. In your case, it's the produce world. And I will take it upon myself to make certain lifestyle choices, associate with certain key people, build networks. How does one, whether it's in this field or another field, determine that level of self-responsibility, find a job for themselves, if you will, start helping to dismantle this matrix control system?
As far as divide and conquer, there's a saying that a therapist told me in 2005 when I was slowly shedding the largest or one of the skins that I shed on the road from being a nice salary man to a not so nice salary man that I am today. And that was a saying by the Sufi sage Rumi, is out beyond the notions of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field and I'll meet you there. So I look at the present political construct not as being wrong, but as being a perspective. And I'm not reacting against that perspective as if it's evil. I'm just saying it serves a certain number of people, and they're going to continue to be served by it unless they see something else that they want. So all I'm doing, I'm not saying I am anti their perspective. I'm saying I'm going to create a set of products based on a different core intention and see if people are interested in, you know, I know that people are interested in paying half price or a quarter of a price for fruits and vegetables, but are they interested in my more inner philosophy? Do they really want to accompany me on that journey? And I've talked to a few people, and a few people are understanding of that. More people than I actually thought would be more interested in that.
One of the things that people have done on a personal basis is they've made choices in what they put into their bodies. You make the very good point. It's a wonderful phrase that I'm going to use myself. Of course, I'll reference you. Food is the agent of manifestation of the physical body. So how did you manage to make the transition to a plant-based diet? I was able to do it for the most part. I'm mostly vegetarian. Once in a while, I still have fish. You know, I source it. I make sure it's not from northern Japanese waters. But my partner is a great cook. She's a vegetarian, and she can whip up these fantastic vegetarian meals that help me make the transition. From your perspective, how does one switch to a plant-based diet and do it in a healthy, productive way?
That's a really good question, and there's a million different answers because there's a million different ways to do it. Some vegans that I know come at it from an ethical perspective, and they educate themselves on the abuse of animals and factory farming, and they make a connection there. And they don't look at themselves as, okay, I'm going to do this in a healthy way. They just do it, and they stop eating all animal products. They stop wearing all animal products, and they do their best to shed that from their life. So that's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it, and the way that actually happened to me, was a kind of a weird experience. I was standing over a stove, and I was still employed in Princeton, New Jersey at my defense contracting job, and I was cooking some chicken thighs. And I had a vision in my head, and an experience happened where I was looking at the chicken thighs and saying, I'm eating children's legs. And for whatever, that came from somewhere deep inside of myself. And I had this utter revulsion for that. And that just flipped the switch. I mean, the switch basically flipped. And what I've been doing since then, and what I encourage people to do, is I've educated myself on the human physiology, what we need in order to live, what the role of animal products in our body is, what they do. And it's almost been 12 years, actually, has been 12 years since I started that educational process. And I'm not able to go back and talk to you as if it was 2006 and I was just starting to understand that soy isn't something that you put in your mouth regardless of its nature, or that, I mean, I just went down this road. The where I'm at now is I basically am sort of looking at a vegan lifestyle includes many things that I wouldn't eat now. And so you used to go over the border into veganism, but now you continue to educate yourself within veganism as to what items you would put in your mouth as a vegan. And so what I started to understand was, you shouldn't eat anything processed or refined, no oils, no packaged goods, and things like that. Well, that led me to be only shopping on the produce aisle in 2010. And the produce aisle was very expensive because you have to eat a lot of it because the calories that you get are very unrefined. You have to shove a lot of bananas in your face, or you have to shove a lot of grapes in your face in order to get up to 2,500 calories or whatever you're eating. So as far as how you get to a lifestyle choice, my lifestyle choice began with an experience. Many other people's lifestyle choices began just from a nutritional perspective. Many people's lifestyle choice actually begins in their mid-40s or early 50s when they're diagnosed with a major disease. There's a raw vegan mecca for health in Lansdale, Pennsylvania, and I know the owner of that place. His name is Arnold Kaufman, and the place is called Arnold's Way. And he was someone who had a serious problem. He was having a heart problem, and he changed his life by finding raw food. And in order to eat that much food, in order to eat organic and eat that much food, your grocery bill is going to be very large. Now, you can either have a really nice, cushy corporate job and afford all that, or you can't afford it. So there's an access problem. So naturally, when I was having money problems, once again, we circle around and up pops this thing called the Produce Club. I mean, people go to him and they're eating the standard American diet, which is, meat and potatoes and all the good things that we've been educated to think are diet. And he says, well, if you'll go vegan, I can help you. Otherwise, you're wasting my time. Well, what he really means is go raw vegan. So one of the things that I wrote about, and I think I have an article on my LinkedIn set of posts called Stages of Vegan Recovery. And what you start out with is you start out basically coming from a high-fat diet, and you walk into veganism, and the only thing that suits your body is going to be the cashew nut spreads and, you know, olive oil and other things that are very high in fat. And many vegans actually stay there. They stay going to the fancy vegan pizza place or to the faux burger place. But from a perspective of health, that is still high fat. And that is still going to lead you down the road. High fat is going to lead you down the road to a diabetic situation, because diabetes is all about fat. And if the door opens for you, if the aha opens for you, you start limiting your protein and you start limiting your fat. And what you wind up with is you wind up with a high carb, low fat, low protein diet, which lends itself to eating lots of fruit. So that's sort of where I'm at right now, is what's commonly called a fruitarian diet. I am not a fruitarian. I'm moving in that direction. I have been in the past. Yeah, that's sort of my nutshell on that one.
For the benefit of our listeners, and I know there's some confusion regarding the subject, can you describe what a raw food diet is? Because some people think that of necessity, someone's referring to like a green superfood drink, for example. Could you define from your perspective what a raw food diet is?
What a raw food diet is basically you need a certain amount of protein during the day, you need a certain amount of fat during the day, and then you need fuel. From my understanding, and I'm not the world's greatest authority on nutrition, from my understanding, the simple molecule that is fuel for the human body is sugar. I don't mean the white stuff from the grocery store. I don't mean any form of processed sugar. Those are all things that have had all of the other cofactors that allow their digestion in a safe way for the human body. They've had that all removed. So all those processed sweets are, in my mind, very dangerous. The items that aren't dangerous and the items that the human physiology is, in my mind, defined to eat is sweet fruit. Apples, bananas, pears, the whole gamut of sweet fruit. So from my perspective, to give you a definition of a diet or I basically looked at what I had on the shelf and I said to myself, okay, what can I eat tomorrow if I want to eat the larger portion of my diet, quote unquote, raw? And there are three ingredients. The three ingredients would be apples, romaine lettuce, and some grapes. Those are just happen to be what's on my shelf. So what are those things supply? Well, if you're going to look at for a full day for 2,000 calories, roughly, you're looking at roughly 900 grams, which is 2 pounds of apples, 1,800 grams, which is 4 pounds of grapes, and 2 pounds, 900 grams of romaine lettuce. What does that deliver to you if you stick it into a nutritional journal, which I did because I like to check myself because I don't want to undereat. Undereating on a raw vegan diet is a quick way to fail, because if you undereat and you don't eat as much sugary sweet fruit, because you got to eat a lot of it, your body is just going to crave and your body is going to say, I am not satisfied. And you're going to go out and you're going to have something that's a dense source of calories, which is going to be something that's fatty. So I basically look at the raw diet as something that you have to be very cognizant of. What that diet that I just described to you delivers, it delivers about 29 to 30 grams of complete protein. And that's actually enough. 5% of calories of protein is enough. It delivers somewhere on the order of 93% simple carbs, which is sugar. And let's not be terrified that you're eating that much sugar. The problem with the mythology and the terror around sugar should actually be terror about fat. A diabetic situation is actually sugar not being able to feed your cells because of a coating of fat that's on the cells. That's a simplistic picture, but it's pretty true. The migration to this type of a dietary regimen, you focus very much on how much fat you're eating. And from my perspective, I describe to you something that really doesn't have any fat that you're basically seeing, but there's actually 4% fat in that diet, which is the lettuce, the grapes, and the apples. And that's way more than enough fat to get along, you know, healthily. Now, in addition to that, you're going to have to supplement yourself with a B12, whether you do it with a sublingual or however you do it. And you could look at me and you could say, well, you know, that's something that's missing from your diet. Well, it's actually missing in 39% of people who are still eating meat, and actually not occurring in the food sources that are from people that are actually eating meat. It's actually enriched into the food. So it's really kind of super missing on that side, except you're getting it in supplements.
Thank you for that rundown of what a raw food diet is. It kind of breaks it down and makes it simple for people to understand. I know from my perspective, I've been on a mostly vegetarian diet for the last 15 months, and I already see the health benefits. I don't have problems with asthma the way I used to. Inflammation across the board has gone down. I used to have horrific problems with gout.
So basically, where is the gout in your life?
It was at the between my toes at the base of my feet.
Okay, so let's look at that, and let's say we're a body and we're incredibly intelligent, and we've got this toxic crud that's overflowing our liver and overflowing all of the other readily available depots. We've got this heart in the middle. We certainly can't put it up in the head. So we're going to send it to the furthest point away from our vital organs that we possibly can. Oh my gosh, there it is in the foot, right?
Yes, and this is uric acid that has otherwise not been metabolized. They settle down between your toes and at the base of your feet, and I've had it so bad where I thought my foot was broken, and I couldn't even get out of bed. I had to call up the my next-door neighbor, ask him to get the office manager of the apartment complex I was living in, send the maintenance guy over to unlock my front door, let my next-door neighbor in, and they both carried me off my bed and got me to the chair in the living room just so I can be semi-functional, and perish the thought that I would have to use the restroom. I would count, Alan, how many hops to the bathroom and how many screams went along with those hops, right? And I go there, I do my thing. Then in my mind, as I'm balancing myself on one foot, I'm thinking, okay, it'll be 6 or 7 hops back to my chair and screaming the whole way. Right. And so that's how bad it is. And because I've been on this mostly, aside from fish and prawns every once in a while, vegetarian diet, I no longer have a problem with gout anymore. Hallelujah. And so if some of our listeners are out there that have issues with gout and inflammation and just myriad other things, just remember, we are what we eat. So if you can avoid some of these foods that cause inflammation, do it, because that's where this reintegration and this healing begins. Now, in the time we've got left, Alan, in the first half, could you tell our listeners how they could get a hold of you and where they could find you on Facebook, for example?
as you said, if you're in the local Philadelphia area, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, United States area, and you want to use my service, there's a website that basically redirects to the Facebook page, and that is produceclub.us. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. And I think those are good contacts for me.
Okay, we've gotten to the end of the first hour, and in the second hour, Alan Ritter is going to tell us how he started his produce club, the details and what to do and what not to do, and I'm really excited about the second half because we are solutions-oriented here at the Cosmic Switchboard Show. If you like what we do at the Cosmic Switchboard, if you believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, and become a member, and we will see you at the top of the next hour.